All right, good afternoon, my brothers and sisters. It's very nice to be here with you all, and really refreshing for Sister Zara and I to be able to come back. And I have to say, one of the most refreshing things is, as someone who grew up in the Goldthwaite and Lampasas Ecclesias, is to come back and see my home Ecclesias going strong in the truth, and it's a real encouragement to come back to that when we can. So our topic this afternoon is examine yourselves, and I'm really happy to be talking on this because I'm not sure what you call it, an epiphany or something like that. What do you call it when, like a kid that her mom works in a bakery and works with flour and dough every day, and she walks through wheat fields to school every day. So every day she sees loads of wheat and she sees loads of flour and turns it, but she never realized flour come from wheat. And then one day it dawns on her and she's like, whoa, like these two huge areas of my life, they're actually the same thing. I don't know what you call that. Is that an epiphany? Epiphany, okay. An epiphany, yeah. Anyway, for me, this topic was that, examine yourselves. You know, we're always hearing people say, examine yourself, examine yourself. Like almost every Sunday morning, right, we hear, examine yourself. And I never really realized most of the things that we do in life are just examining. And we'll talk more about this. But first, let's define what examine means. So, see, if I do this right, it will give us a definition. There it is. Examine. And there's a long, several definitions, but I'll just hit some of the high points here. To inspect carefully. To look into the real state of a thing. Figure out what's really going on with this. I do this every day at work. I work on stuff that nurses break, as Burl likes to put it. And when the nurse sends down an IV pump that's not working, first thing I do is I start examining it. What's really going on here? The nurse said, I came on my shift and it was already broken, but I can see there's Coca-Cola dripping out of the bottom of it, so I'm assuming some nurse put a Coca-Cola can on there and dumped it over and, you know, didn't want to catch the heat for it. Okay, so you pull it open, what's wrong here, you know, and you start testing different modules, and this one still works, it's not that one. This one doesn't work anymore. So it's either this one or something feeding it, right? So you're examining, right? That's my job, that's what I get paid for. It's just examining. And then every Sunday we come in and examine yourselves, like, whoa, I don't know how to do that. How do we examine ourselves? Well, you're doing it every day, right? To look into the state of a subject. To try by a rule or a law, right? So when I'm at work and I check and say, well, this thing's supposed to be putting out 5 volts here. It's a 5-volt battery. Right? Probably should put out 5 volts. Stick my voltmeter on there. You get 5 volts. Okay, I guess we're good then, right? And I check over here. It's supposed to be 13.5 volts here, and it's showing 4. I'm going down to 3. Probably something wrong, right? So we have a rule, an expectation that we have, and we're examining according to that. We're trying by a rule or a law. So that's the English definition of the word examination. That's from Webster's. I've done a search here through the Bible on where the word examine is found. One of the interesting ones here is Psalm 26:2. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. So he actually got 3 synonyms here. This is common in Scripture, right? He'll say something one way and then say the exact same thing a different way. He's not just repeating himself to get his word count up, right? He's saying, pay attention here. No, really, pay attention here, right? He says it twice for emphasis. This time he says it 3 times. So each time he uses a different original word. So we can look at 3 different definitions here, right? So examine, just bakhan. It means to test. Okay, yeah, that's kind of what we thought. Investigate. Examine means prove me, though. That means to test again, by implication to attempt. So when I put that voltmeter on there and it says 5 volts, I say, yeah, it's good. Or I could pull a little 5-volt motor, hook the battery up to it. Does the motor turn? Yeah, okay, I tested it. I tried it out, right? And it works. Or I might run the system on there and say, you know, deliver IV. And if it does, it's working, right? So there's 2 different ways there. Examine, so you're looking into something, or prove it, you're trying it out, okay? And then try my reins, and that's That's the word to fuse metal. That is to refine. Okay? So like if someone hands you a ring and it looks like it's plastic, but they're telling you, no, that's gold. There's a real quick way to tell, right? Pass it through the fire, and if it stinks like burning plastic, that's probably what it is. Okay? This is the other word for examine. So that's a real interesting passage. It gives us a pretty good idea what the scriptures are saying, what they mean when they say examine. We can go to the New Testament too. There's a few uses of it there. Here's one we're real familiar with. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. 1 Corinthians 11. And also 2 Corinthians 13. Examine yourselves whether ye be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ is in you, except ye be reprobates? Okay, so that's two we probably ought to look at, because this is a Greek. So it's going to be a different original word, right? This is dokimazo. Dokimazo. It's from a different Greek word.
Let's pull it up in the window here, the Strong's window here.
It means to test, literally or figuratively, and by implication, it means to approve. And that's what that original word is, approve, or acceptable. It's something that has been approved. You put your stamp of approval on it, you say, pass the test, right? And you do that because you've tested it. That's what this examine is. To examine yourself is to test yourself, to see if you are going to be approved. And the other one, it's a different word, 2 Corinthians 13. It means to endeavor, that's to try it out, right? To test, to endeavor, to scrutinize, to entice, or to discipline. So this is testing, seeing what's going on, but it also seems to indicate fixing the problem, right? And there's a real important word in here in parentheses. Objectively. If we're going to test something objectively, that means we're not just going to say, well, this is kind of how I feel about it. It looks good to me. No, you're going to take a benchmark or a standard and you're going to say, does it meet that standard? Right? Just like I said, a battery said 5 volts on it. So I'm not just going to say, well, there's a number there. It's 3, and I kind of like the number 3, so I feel pretty good about this. No, I've got a standard that I'm testing this against, right? 5 volts. If it's below that, we ain't happy, right? So this introduces, if we're going to examine ourselves objectively, we got to have a standard against which we're checking ourselves, right? When we examine. Okay. Let's
look at this 2 Corinthians 13 a little closer too. I like this verse.
Examine yourselves whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. So there it is again, right? Prove.
Now that one is the same word that we saw earlier. That dokimazo. From 1 Corinthians, let a man examine himself. That's this word. It's translated prove here.
To test. By implication, to approve. So prove your own selves. He's saying, don't wait till you get to the judgment for me to look into what you've been doing. You need to be doing that right now. You only get one shot at judgment. But you get every day, you get another shot at checking yourself out, right? So prove your own selves. Know ye not how your own selves how that Jesus Christ is in you, except ye be reprobates.
Now that's G96. It don't look like it'd be anywhere close to G1381. But let's just take a look here.
From G1, that's add. It's kind of like saying un in English. It makes the opposite of the rest of the word, like acceptable and unacceptable. Are actually really similar concepts, but they're opposites, right? Direct opposites. Well, that's this word. G1 is negative, not. Okay, could be translated not. And 1384. We already saw that 1384. That means to approve. Right? Reprobates means not approved. Test yourselves every day to see if you will be approved, so that when time comes around for judgment, you're not surprised. Oh, I'm unapproved. Test yourself every day. This is the point that he's making.
Okay.
So one way of putting that is to be a devil's advocate to ourselves. And if we look at other places in Scripture where this examine is used, we'll find things like Paul being examined. people are investigating, is he doing anything illegally here? Because the scribes and the Pharisees, they'd come and they'd say, this man's preaching lawlessly or unlawfully, right? And they'd examine him, right? And they're looking for something wrong with him. There's a few other places where an enemy is examining someone. And this is the same word. Same word here is we're supposed to be doing. So we're supposed to be playing devil's advocate acts for ourselves and saying, not can I find anything that I'm doing right, but actually can I find anything I'm doing wrong? Because I don't need to change the things I'm doing right. I just need to change the things I'm doing wrong, right? So those are the ones I'm looking for. Just like when I break into that piece of medical equipment, I say, I know something's wrong here. I'm not looking for all the things that are working right because I don't have to mess with them. I got to find the thing that's working wrong or not working, and I got to fix it. So that's what we're looking for. Right? So when we examine ourselves, it's not like, did I do this? Well, yeah, that's my favorite thing to do. So yeah, I've done that one. It's, no, what have I not done? This is the scriptural use of this word for examine. So give a little example of that. I know everybody in here doesn't fix equipment like I do, but how many people drove here? I mean, like we're behind the steering wheel drove here. Yeah, probably a third or a quarter of us drove here. Yeah. Oh yeah, I didn't drive here, did I? And how many of y'all that drove here, at least 50% of the time, were just looking at the road? Just looking at the road, right? Yeah. You're looking at the road 50% of the time. Why? Why would you spend half of your trip here looking at the road? There's better things to look at, right? How come you're looking at the road the whole time? Look at somebody behind the wheel and they're just doing this, right? They ain't shifting gears. They're on the highway. They're not shifting gears. They're not using the turn signal. Just this. You see a kid that's playing car and they're not just doing this. The driver is just doing this. And people get paid to do that for a living. What are they doing? They're examining. Right? Looking at where am I at in the road? In relation to the white line? In relation to the yellow line? Where am I at? Where am I headed? Am I headed for the ditch or if I headed where I'm supposed to be going? They're checking relationship to other drivers. It's examine, right? And they're probably so good at driving that you don't see them make little adjustments on that steering wheel. Right? So they're not doing it like the little kid in the Fisher-Price car. It's tiny little micro adjustments. Examine, adjust. Examine, adjust. Examine, adjust. Do the whole. If you drove here, you did it the whole way here. Examine, adjust. It's almost like we're built to do this. Constantly look, where are we at? Where do we need to be? You're looking at your speed sometimes, okay? So you're looking at your position, but you're also looking at other parameters like your speed. You're looking for, is there anything coming up that's going to be a change? Do I need to get on my brakes now so I'm not slamming on them in a half a mile, right? If you're driving a manual, you might be looking at your RPMs. If you're a really good driver, you're going to be looking at things like, and this is stuff I never think to look at, fuel gauge, probably a good thing to check every now and then. Your engine temperature, that's probably another good thing to check every now and then. So, looking at how their car is running, any adjustments need to be made there? Lane position, any adjustments need to be made there? Speed, any other laws, any indications of upcoming hazards? And you're watching those ditches too, right? That deer is just waiting for another insurance claim, right? Yeah. And that's how we examine ourselves too. Just ask a few simple questions. Where am I at right now? Where am I headed right now? What changes need to be made to get where I need to be? What corrections do I need to do? And third thing is, what's the best way to make those corrections? You see somebody that just started driving, or maybe they never driven anything at speed, and they notice they're veering to the right hand of the lane a little bit, and it's... And everyone's sucked up against the windows on the right side of the car, right? Because they made that adjustment so abruptly. And case of a lot of collisions, right? You're getting a wipeout because they overcorrected. So they didn't think about what's the best way to make this correction, right? You know, you see upcoming hazard and it's a half a mile away. Probably the best way to deal with that is not to slam on your brakes, is you get somebody coming into your rear end, right? You say, I've got time to deal with this. What's the best way to deal with it?
and you do it. Now, if you've got a deer coming right out in front of you, you do need to slam on the brakes. Okay? So sometimes that's the best way to do it. Same in our lives. Where am I at right now? What are the? How do I stack up against the measure of the character of the Scriptures? Where am I headed? In other words, am I getting better or am I getting worse? Am I focused on improvements or am I focused on things that are going to pull me back down? So if that's the case, now that I've assessed where I am, what do I need to change? What corrections do I need to make to get from where I am and where I'm headed to where I need to be, to where my goal is? And then make a plan for how those corrections come out. You don't just say, I'm going to be more patient. Okay, I figured out where I'm at. I'm impatient, and I'm not heading to be any more patient. So I'm going to make a change. I'm going to make a correction. I'm going to be focused. I'm going to make a correction, and the correction is going to be becoming more patient. But you never say, how am I going to do that? Then it's probably not going to happen, right? You say, I'm just going to be more patient. Just going to do it. Well, how are you going to do it? You're going to do a study on patience. You're going to look at some characters of patience. You're going to try to remind yourself every morning about how patient your grandpa was or your dad was when problems came up. Are you going to take 3 deep breaths before you answer a coworker or your wife, kid? What's your plan of action, right? And we do that in our daily lives. We make a plan of action, and we're going to do a correction. And we just do it almost automatically. Okay, so we looked at this 2 Corinthians 13:5, and one of the things we found from it was we need a benchmark or a standard. If we're going to examine something, we need a standard to examine it against, right? Like I used the example of that 5-volt battery, but when you're driving, it's the lines on the road usually, right? The lines on the road tell you where you should be in that road. Some people have a hard time keeping between the fences, but good drivers, they're looking at where in the lane they're at, right? And speed. You've got a speed limit, and you've got a gauge right there on your vehicle, right? And you're comparing the two. So you've got a standard. And craftsmanship uses this all the time. Most jobs do, actually. You ever see a craftsman working? He's always got all these guides everywhere. You see a mason working? String lines all over that job. You know, good roofer working? You've got a chalk line pop like every 5 layers of shingles. I don't know, what's another example of that? You know, somebody that's laying out a room like this and they want it to look really nice, like, I don't know, it's going to be some bunch of ambassadors visiting. They got all those chairs lined out just perfect. They probably came in there with a laser level and it's lined them all up, right? We got all these tools that craftsmen, like people that are really obsessed with perfection, are using. They're always using guidelines, right? And I think that's kind of the difference between a kid and a craftsman. You know, sometimes you might go up to a woodworking shop, a fine cabinetry shop, and one of the guys is like babysitting his nephew or something for a few hours after school. His nephew's out back of the woodworking shop, and he's got the scraps of wood and some old hatchet, and he's a chipping away, right? And his uncle's inside, and he's doing the same thing with a very similar tool. But nobody's paying the kid outside. And they're paying big bucks to his uncle inside. And they're both doing the same thing, right? What's the difference? You say, well, the guy inside is making a nice cabinet. But why? Why is his work making a nice cabinet and the kid outside isn't? That's real simple. One of them has a master set of plans, and they are examining their work and adjusting it to those plans. That's the only difference. They are examining and adjusting, examining, adjusting. And when they're done, there's something made worth keeping. When that kid is done because he has no plan and he's not working to any set of guidelines, what he makes isn't worth keeping. I think there's a really strong parable for us in that if we work away without constantly examining our work against guidelines and constantly adjusting them to guidelines, when we get to judgment, God's not going to say, yeah, I want to keep that in my house forever. Just like when a customer comes up to that woodworking shop and he looks at what the kid did outside, he's not going to say, man, I want to keep that in my house forever. No. You go inside where someone has you skill and examined and adjusted and critically examined their work to make it perfect, Now someone can come in and say, yes, that is a peace that I want to preserve. I want to keep in my house forever. And that's what we want God to do with us. We want him to look at us and say, yeah, you're worth keeping. So what's he expecting of us then? He's expecting us to examine ourselves and make adjustments and keep doing this. Keep doing this. Keep doing this. Keep doing this. Pull up Exodus 31 here. I really like this chapter. I think we talked about it in Wednesday night class here a while back, didn't we, Ed? And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, see, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God, in wisdom, and in understanding, and in knowledge, and in all manner of workmanship. You sound like a pretty good guy here. Filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, and in all manner of workmanship, or what we might call craftsmanship, to devise cunning works, to work in gold and in silver and in brass and in cutting of stones. Actually, I didn't realize there were stones cut for the tabernacle until I read this just this week. Cutting of stones to set them and in carving of timber to work in all manner of workmanship or craftsmanship. So this fellow Bezalel, he understood this iterative process of examine, adjust. And he also knew how to take a set of blueprints, turn them into dimensions and guidelines on the work he was going to prepare, and then make that work match those guidelines in this iterative process. Examine, adjust. Where am I at? Where do I need to be? What's the best way to get there? Put down one tool, pick up another, because it's a better way to get there. Okay? I got a little video here of something like that. It's kind of hard to find a video of anyone from the building of the tabernacle. Even YouTube doesn't have those. But there's some that get fairly close. I hope y'all can see that all right. Make it a little bigger. This is a man that builds traditional stone walls, very much like the stone setters of Bible times. And first thing you notice, he's got a good set of guides. And as he does his work, he will constantly examine and adjust his work. Examine and adjust his work. Always looking at the guides, checking against his standards, working off of a master plan, and he takes that plan and he transfers to a set of guidelines that he's going to work to. Every piece that he lays, he assesses it against those plans, against his guidelines, adjust it however it needs adjusted, then he examines it again, and then he adjusts it again. You watch him here. He's checking it. He's examining with his hands and his eyes. And he adjusts. Then he's going to examine it again. And he's going to adjust. I didn't tell him to do this. This wasn't a video on examine yourselves. This is just a common stone worker. Okay? This is what he does all day. Examine, adjust. He looked at that rock. He said, it's not the right size and shape. I'm going to change it. So he changes it. Then he tries it out again. Examining. He says, I need to make another adjustment here. Examine, adjust. Examine, adjust. And this isn't some job that, I don't know, the president of lean manufacturing designed for him and told him this is how you need to do it. This is just rocks, right? It didn't come with an owner's manual that said you need to examine and adjust and examine and adjust. It's just a basic human skill. Examine, adjust. Examine, adjust. Almost every job that God gave mankind is simply that. Examine, adjust. One after another. He does this all day long. One stone after another. He examines and adjusts. And it's a parable for our life. We have to do it over and over and over. Examine, adjust. Where am I at? Where do I need to be? What changes do I have to make to get there? And what's the best way to make those changes? Okay. See, sometimes he uses a hard blow. Sometimes he uses a light one. He's going to use one too hard here. Watch this. Oh, ruin that piece. Right. Examine, adjust. See your string lines there? He's always critical of his own work.
He says, that's not quite right. I need to adjust it. I'm going to examine it again. By the guideline, by true guide, examine, adjust. At the end of the day, his stone wall is a continuous stream of examination and adjustment. That's all it is, isn't it? Any kid can swing a hammer at rocks. You give a kid a claw hammer, and they'll go out in the yard and hammer rocks. That's what they'll do. But you won't get a wall like that. What he does, what he gets paid for, is examining and adjusting. Examining and adjusting. And that's how you turn ugly, worthless stones that a farmer wanted out of his field into a strong and beautiful and functional and a very valuable wall. And that wall is used for nurturing. The children of Israel used them for nurturing their flocks, for nurturing their children in the walls of their houses. They used them for defense. We just read about Nehemiah rebuilding the wall, and this is how they did it right here. They picked a stone, they examined it, and they adjusted it till it fit what they needed. Examine, adjust. Examine, adjust. It can be used for glory and for beauty. In Solomon's temple, they did the same thing. Every stone they put in there, examine, adjust. Examine, adjust. It's not just stone working, though. Let's pull another one up. It said Bezalel worked in stone, but he also worked in wood, in cutting timber. God taught him how to do that. Taught him the principles.
Very similar to the same principles he's teaching us to do. And a woodworker here, and he's got himself a guideline, and he's working to that guideline. Every swing of the axe, he's examining where he's at, where he needs to be, making a correction. You see, he switched here. First, he's in coarse, big old coarse chunks he's taken off, and now he says, I better switch tools. There's a better way now to get me from where I'm at to where I need to be. He wants to get there as efficiently and as effectively as possible. There's something else he does here that I think is a real parable to us. You know, he's consulting his master blueprints here, so he knows the plan of the house he's building. He's building the house frame here. He knows the plans, the master plans of the house he's building. But he doesn't just say, okay, let's build now. He transfers all of those into dimensions on the actual piece that he's working on, right? He doesn't just say, okay, it's a truss beam, it's got four walls, okay, let's build it. Every piece gets painstakingly measured and laid out. He has guidelines everywhere. I've done a little bit of this stuff, and you know, you spend more time drawing lines on wood than you do actually cutting the wood. Constant measuring and layout. Because he wants to make sure that when he starts doing work, he's doing it right. Okay? That's a pretty important step, to go from blueprints to what are my guidelines to work with here, right? We can do Bible study and we can memorize whole swaths of the Scripture, but if we don't take that knowledge from the Scripture and say, what does this mean today? What does this mean this week? What do I need to do? What are my guidelines for this week? What are my goals for this day or this week? What good is it going to do us? We go to meeting and we say, well, I guess I better be a better person this week. Okay. And you come back the next week and say, oh, I guess I better be a better person this week. Okay. And you come back, well, big news, this week I need to be a better person. How? What are your goals? What are your aims? When you examine yourself, you're not just saying, I need to be better. How do you need to get better? What are your deficiencies and what are you going to do to correct them? How am I going to make these changes? And don't just say, well, I don't know, I'll just quit my job because I don't like that coworker and I have a hard time getting along with them, so I'll just quit my job. That'll solve the problem, right? That's not the best way to do it. That's kind of like saying, well, that log's not perfectly square, so I'll just throw it away and get another one. Well, your next one ain't going to be square either, right? Unless you make it square. So you figure out what's the best way to do that. So we have our blueprint, our master guides in the Scriptures. And when we read those, we have to figure out, how does this apply to my life? What does this mean I need to change? What are the parameters I have to live in my situation? Because my coworkers are different than your coworkers. My family situation is different than your family situation. Right? But you've got to figure out how that master plan applies to work we can do today. And once you've made those guidelines, you go through the whole day, the whole week, looking at where you're at and how to adjust. Where you're at, how to adjust. Seems really repetitious, but it's a routine. It's something that we're all used to doing. You know, it doesn't matter whether you stonework or woodwork or drive for a living or fix IV pumps for a living. It's something we're made to do. Examine and adjust. Examine and adjust. But don't we like to do it to ourselves? It's a little harder when you put the axe to yourself and you start saying, you know, I've invested in me my whole life, right? Why is my product not up to snuff? You know, it's easy if someone just does a 5-minute drawing and say, well, I don't know, the legs are kind of longer, or their arms are kind of longer than the legs in that guy. And people don't get too upset about it. But what if it's a masterpiece that they spent like 20 years on, and you say, you know, that lady's supposed to be real pretty, but her legs are shorter than her arms. They might get a little upset about that, right? Don't we like to critique things that we're really invested in, and we're really invested in our own lives? But we have to. Because if we don't, it ain't going to turn out being a picture anybody wants to hang in their house. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for being a permanent part of the house of God. Okay, I know I've been kind of repetitious enough, but say this again. The questions we ask when we're examining ourselves, where am I at? And this works whether examining yourselves in your job or a Sunday meeting, you're driving, you know, any aspect of your life that you're examining. Where am I at? Where am I headed? That's where you're at right now. Okay, right now, where am I sitting and where am I facing? Where do I need to be sitting? Okay, if I need to be way over here, then I better make sure if I'm sitting right here, I'm headed that way. Right? Correct. So where am I at and where am I headed? What corrections need to be made? What do I need to do different? And how do I make those changes? What's the best way to make those changes? Okay. And that's how great work is made. That's how you take a downed log. It's already been cut off from the tree, right? It's a log. What good is it? It's not a tree anymore. It's a log. What good is it? It's firewood, right? But you can take that and you can turn it into something that gets to be a permanent part of a beautiful house. This iteration of examine, adjust, examine, adjust. We do the same thing for us. We're just dirt. We're Adam's sons. But if we want to be part of that holy city, Jerusalem, that we read of in Revelations, full of precious stones, well, this is how we do it. Examine ourselves and adjust ourselves. So I know lots of people really like a take-home thing that, like, I don't know, they can really apply every day. And I guess that's kind of what we've been talking about, but I have another one here. There's this morning routine that I came across, and it's one that I thought of myself. It's just one I came across. But it's a morning routine, and it's a meditation, praying, and journaling. Hey, so this fellow that talks about it, he says every morning, give yourself, you know, if you got 20 minutes, do it 20 minutes. If you got only 5 minutes, just do it 5 minutes, okay? You don't have to take a long time, although it is very useful. And he says you sit someplace quiet as soon as you get up. You go sit someplace quiet and you think about what are the things I've been needing to work on this week. And hopefully, you know, the first day you do this might be a little bit hard, but second day you do it, third day, fourth day, you know what those goals have been. And if you thought about it in Sunday meeting, you'd probably know too. Okay? What do I need to be focusing on this week? And you sit down that morning and you say, where am I at with those goals? And that's meditation, really, isn't it? It's thinking about, where am I at with my life? Where am I at with yesterday? And where am I at with today? And that's the question going forward, is what do I need to do today to reach those goals? There for a while, one of mine was, you know, I feel like I'm giving a lot of focus and energy at home, but if I was my boss at work, I don't know if I'd be too happy with how much energy I was given at work. And scriptures say, work for your boss the way you work for God. So I'll probably need to work on that. Okay? Next question is, how do I need to work on that? Well, most of the time I don't realize I'm distracted until I've been distracted for about 20 minutes. So I need to back up here and think about what's getting me distracted from the work I should be doing, what's keeping me from being as productive as I ought to be.
And I can identify that. And I did identify that, I think. There's a few inefficiencies in my work where I had to wait for something. And while I was waiting for it, I got off doing something else. Didn't realize the other thing I'd been waiting on was done 10 minutes ago before I come back to it, right? Okay. So how am I going to work on that? I'll lay out how I'm going to work on it. And that's that meditation. You need to couple that meditation with prayer about it. You come to a conclusion. Okay, this is what I need to work on. And I better ask God for help with it. And I probably ought to say, I'm sorry I haven't done better with this in the past. So I pray about it. But there's something really powerful at that point. Instead of stopping there, pull out a piece of paper, pull out a journal. If you want to call it a diary, pull out a diary. Okay, and write down, this is what I need to do today. This is what I need to focus on this week. This is where I've been slumping. And this is what I need to do to fix it. Right? And you got clear goals that day and you embedded those in your mind by writing them out in a journal. And you made yourself accountable too, right? Because the next day, you just flip back and say, I said I was going to do that. Right? It's really powerful. It's a really powerful routine. And you can do it. You can do it in 5 minutes. And it, you know, it's what we try to do on Sunday meeting for the whole week. But doing it every day to start our day is really good too. So I think I'll just conclude there. Have a little bit of a conclusion notes here. So the sort of overall plan here is that we study the big picture, which is the master plan. We study the scriptures. We study what God wants of us, the characters that he approves, accepts, the fruits of the Spirit, if you will. What they paint as the picture of who will be accepted as saints. And then we have to figure out how to transfer that big picture instead of just saying, I'm going to be like Abram. Or I'm going to be like Gideon. Or I'm going to be like Peter. How? What does that look like in your daily life? What are the changes, the guidelines, the parameters that you need to work to? You're going to transfer that master set of plans down to your work for that day or that week. Okay, so we transfer that big picture into daily or weekly goals for ourselves. And we say, you know, Abram was patient. I want to be like Abram. Better work on my patience. Okay? That gives me a direct goal for that day, not just be like Abraham. It's be more patient, because that's where one of the ways you're lacking. Okay? And then you say, what parts of my life do I need to change, and how do I change them? And then we focus on those goals every day, all day long, actually. And that seems like a lot to ask, but like I said at the beginning of this talk, the epiphany that I had was that we talk about examining ourselves as if it's something we need to do for a life in the truth, and yet humans do it everywhere, all the time. We're built to do it. Almost every activity we do. You see somebody walking down the sidewalk, and they're walking like this, or they're walking like this? Yeah, of course. See it all the time, right? You ever see somebody walking down the sidewalk, and they're walking like this? No, they're walking in the field walking like that, because they done lost the sidewalk. Because even when we're looking ahead, we're constantly examining with our eyes in the peripheral where that sidewalk is. We do it every step we take in our lives. We're examining the ground in front of us, and we're doing it subconsciously because we're designed to do it. And we've got to teach ourselves to examine our own selves, right? So that becomes natural, becomes instinctive. We're designed to do it, so we can do it, and God's expecting us to do it. He doesn't design us to do something and then not expect us to do it. Okay, so I hope you all found that helpful, and I certainly did. So thank you all to the brethren that have arranged this, and big thanks to all the sisters in the kitchen too. That was a sure good lunch.